Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube network. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined, of course, by Travis Ryer, the proprietor of Ryer on YouTube. It's a super YouTube channel. You got to check it out. It's growing quickly. Give it a like, give us a subscribe, and follow along with this content and all else that Travis is putting on YouTube. It's really good stuff. Also good stuff, Travis, from the Alabama football program this week on homecoming at Bryant-Denny Stadium, 34-0 over the Missouri Tigers. It was Alabama's second shutout of the year, actually, but first in conference play since Mississippi State back in 2020. So been a while since an SEC shutout for sure for Alabama, but they get it done against a hobbled Mizzou offense, but a shutout nonetheless.
Yeah, and good for the psyche, good for, you know, just getting the job done, as you said, against an offense, missing some critical pieces, also starting a quarterback in Brady Cook, who was less than 100%. Then he has the hand injury in the first half Saturday. So Drew Pine comes on, and Alabama did what it should have done against a quarterback of Pine's sort of skill set and capabilities. And oh, look, going into the bye week, feeling better about yourself. Now it really ramps up the month of November. As we know, typically for Alabama football, it is the month that reveals all. We've already had a good bit revealed about this Alabama team, but yeah, in terms of its college football playoff chances, we're going to get all those answers in the coming month.
Yeah, big game, Alabama LSU, made bigger, frankly, by the 12-team playoff. This if this was a 4-team playoff, obviously, Travis, then this would be probably the least heralded Alabama LSU game we've seen in a long time. But because of the 12-team playoff, the stakes in this one are big.
This would be kind of like 2010 Alabama LSU. Remember when Alabama went down there and in 10 and already had the loss to South Carolina, took the loss at LSU, followed that up with a loss to Auburn in the Iron Bowl. That was a 3-loss Alabama team in the regular season. So this team trying to avoid that as well, another first since from that perspective. So a lot on the line in the month of November, but again, in terms of the Missouri performance, I know we'll go around the team kind of with that, but some injuries that impacted Alabama going into the game, some injuries in the game that could impact Alabama moving forward, but more so than even physical, Chase, it just felt like the psyche of this team, from Jalen Milroe to that offense in general coming off the Tennessee performance. And then, you know, defensively, it was a little up and down in Knoxville, but good to see a 4-quarter performance from Kane Womack's guys. And, you know, we learned just in the span of a couple hours last night how quickly narratives and things can change, because look at what happened to LSU. We'll talk about that later, too, in the final 2 quarters of its road trip to College Station.
Yeah, collapse for the Tigers, the likes of which I definitely did not expect when I saw where that game was at the half. As for Alabama, yeah, Travis, a confidence builder, especially for the defensive side of the ball. 3 more interceptions, 10 takeaways by that defense now in its last 3 games. To me, that's cautionary a little bit, because from what I've seen of this defense, Travis, if the cost of getting those takeaways is that they're giving up too many explosives, then you can get 2 or 3 takeaways and still get ripped for 30 points plus. Right. Yeah. So I don't. That being said, though, a clip of 10 over 3 games is a hell of a clip.
It is. And Alabama now in Southeastern Conference play is +7 in turnover margin. And, you know, typically you would hear that number and you wouldn't think a team would already have 2 conference losses. But I think that kind of goes back to what you're talking about. The takeaways have been good. But it has been a little bit boom or bust on the defensive side. At what price do some of those come? And have you been able to take care of, say, opposing run games like you would like? Weren't able to do that in the second half against Missouri. Did a pretty good job in the second half against Tennessee. Did a pretty good job against Missouri. You look at Missouri's rushing totals, especially for the backs with Nate Noel and about 150, 155 combined rushing yards for the 2 running backs that Alabama saw primarily. But I think some of that you were willing to almost concede because you had a lead. You were in a good position. And if Missouri wanted to run the football and run clock with it, you were probably okay with. And then to preserve the shutout there late, you also played a lot of young people, and gave up some stuff on the ground there late. But when you needed to stop to try to preserve that shutout, we saw Alabama get its guys in there and keep Missouri out of the end zone.
Yeah, definitely a big stop there down on the goal line. The secondary aggressive, Bray Hubbard, Travis, heck of a game for him. Heck of a game for him against Tennessee as a substitute as well. So he's looking like he could turn into a bright spot at what looked like something that could be of concern in Knoxville.
Yeah, it was what you wanted to see in terms of depth at the safety position because no Keon Sab. I thought Malachi's interception there in the second quarter was really big at the time, right? That's a 6-0 game, and it kind of felt like Tennessee. It felt like you should be up by more than, say, one score, and then Malachi taking the ball away, and not only that, returning it, creating a short field for an offense. It was kind of stumbling around a little bit there in the first half. Give Missouri defensively some credit for that, but to be able to hit the big play down to Emmanuel Henderson inside the five, then get in the end zone. From that point forward, you felt like Alabama probably going to be okay, especially with Cook not in the game there once we got late into the second quarter.
Yeah, punching that first touchdown in to make it 13-0 with, I think, 1:54 left in the first half. That was huge for Alabama for sure. I thought, too, Travis, that I was surprised by this. I'm critical of this. Where was the urgency from Missouri after they took over from that touchdown, right? They had the time, and from the play calling to the tempo, it just looked like they weren't in burn the clock mode, but they were, it looked like they were just trying to move from the 50 to the 30 to kick a field goal down one. That was right. You know what I mean? That's what the play calling looked like. And that's what the production looked like. And they puttered down the field and wasted those 2 minutes.
I think Drew Pine maybe created some of that hesitancy for Drinkwitz and Kirby Moore and that offensive staff after throwing that pick to Malachi. I mean, you're down 13-0, but you just saw this guy throw it straight to a middle of the field safety there on that previous possession. I'm with you. What do you have to lose at that point too? Right. But without Brady Cook in there, I'm sure there wasn't much confidence in what Pine was going to be able to do in that situation. And that was some of the rushing yardage I was talking about too. I mean, Missouri running the football there in that situation, I think Kane Womack and the defense were going to be pretty much okay with letting you have 7, 8, 10 yards, even if it kept that clock moving.
Jalen Milroe, 16 for 26, 215 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, no lost fumbles, no turnovers from Milroe. A couple of sacks. Pass protection I thought was pretty good for the most part. I believe each starting tackle was responsible for the 2 sacks allowed. But Milroe, I thought, certainly looked better than he did against Tennessee significantly. Still, you still see some hesitancy there. For defenses, I still think there's a certain amount of predictability there, right, for Milroe. Nevertheless, he did look better. Alabama ran the ball 37 for 271. Big number there. Big day for Justice Haynes. A lot of that was the dam breaking late, right? Alabama didn't have a ton of rushing yards by halftime, certainly. And another note for me, too, Travis, on this game is Luther Burden's disappearance from this offense over the last few weeks. And obviously Brady Cook, going down last week and this week has something to do with that. But if I'm Eli Drinkwitz and I'm going to lose 34-0, my best football player on offense is going to get more than 5 touches before it gets out of hand.
Yeah. I agree. They tried to create some easy touches for him. Early in the game, I thought Alabama out on the perimeter did a pretty good job. Malachi kind of set the tone, right? First play of the game was quick game out to Burton, and Malachi did a nice job of snuffing that out quickly. And so I don't know if you can put it all on Cook and his injury situation, and then Pines just lack of ability, for lack of a better way of putting it. But Theo Weeks too. I mean, there's two of those receivers. I think they combined for like five catches for 22 yards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in any world that you asked Kane Womack, would you take that? Absolutely, he would. And then you also had Nate Noel out, the top rusher for Missouri in the game. So certainly dealing with a short hand. But I thought Alabama did what it needed to do when Burton did get those rare touches. And yeah, that's just not going to be a winnable situation when not only Burton is limited like that, but also Weiss.
I was surprised Burton wasn't more involved in Missouri's running game against Alabama, given the situation. And I'll be more surprised if he's not. For as long as Missouri's got a roll with Drew Pine, I think Luther Burton ought to be a runner, ought to be half a running back, right?
Like Kendrick Law. Yeah.
Give him six or eight. I mean, look, where was the shovel pass to Luther Burton yesterday, right? That would have hit for 40, wouldn't it, Travis?
Yeah, that pesky shovel pass. You know, we'll talk about this maybe later too. I saw Vandy try to go back to that against Texas, but you know, once you put that on tape a time or two.
I missed that. What happened?
It got stuffed pretty good. But yeah, I mean, there's creative ways that you can get a guy like that to football, but you still have to have capable quarterback play. And without Cook, and even with him, part of his thing too is mobility and his ability to do some things with his legs. So dealing with an ankle injury, you kind of felt like you were going to be able to get after him a little bit. We saw it with Jahd Campbell early with the sack of Brady Cook. It wasn't a big tackle for loss day for Alabama. I think they just had three tackles for loss, the one sack by Campbell. But I thought the tackling in general, though, continued to show some signs of improvement, getting more guys to the football. I think you're seeing more of that, kind of what we had seen in the first half, especially at Tennessee. So I think there were some encouraging signs from that perspective, too.
On the injury front for Alabama, Travis Cole Adams goes down with some kind of lower leg injury. I saw him go off the field and on crutches a couple minutes before the end of the game. It didn't certainly didn't look good. Who knows how long he'll be out. But to me, it's a blow for Alabama, not just at the receiver position, but also with what he can do on punt returns. He's the best ball handler and judgment guy I think they got for punt return. Not as explosive as Ryan Williams, of course not. But I think he looks more comfortable catching punts to me. And I also think he recognizes the stayaways maybe a little quicker than Williams or Mbakwe.
Seems to get a good read on those punts. Very natural to him back there. And he also, you know, at times gives you a little something on the returns. He's not just a fair catch guy back there,
right,
but
right.
This did look like it's going to be an extended stretch. I think that you could anticipate being without Cole Adams. So yeah, how you go about that. We saw Jalen Mbakwe jump back there. He had sort of a double muff on a fair catch. So that's going to be something that they have to work through, and it's good to have a bye week, not just in terms of offense, defense, but even your special teams can benefit from it. So this comes at a pretty good time if you're going to have that type of situation. And Cole Adams too, man. I think Jalen had developed a little bit of a comfort level with him in some big spots on offense. I mean, we had seen Cole Adams, Georgia, he stepped up big. This is a guy that you know, had really worked his way into a legitimate rotational spot.
Right.
I think Kobe Prentice and some other guys, I know Kobe's been dealing with some stuff maybe, but had felt that from a reps perspective. So now in game Saturday, we see Kobe Prentice. It felt like a little bit more, maybe Emmanuel Henderson. So it's not just special teams. It's also going to be on the offensive side with Adams if he's out for a while too.
Penalty check this week, Travis. Got to do it for a while.
At least we should get a sponsor for that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. How about like Tide or Shout, some kind of laundry company for the flag, right?
Yeah, or a flag company or something, you know. Yeah.
Let me send an email. I'm sure they'll get right back.
A light bulb went off. Yeah.
7 for 85, Travis, the number for Alabama. You know, that's more than enough to get you beat, if depending on the timing. But coming off a game where it was 15 flags, 7, it kind of felt like nothing if you were an Alabama guy, right?
Well, in the first half, though, it was like, here you go again. I think it was 5 for 55 in the first half. So they did clean it up there in the second half. That was good to see. But it's still something that I'm sure Kalen DeBoer and that staff are going to continue to preach, because you're going back on the road. You know, you think about the issues that, not just under Kalen DeBoer, as we talked about here on the show in the past, Nick Saban's teams, when it went to Texas A&M a few years back, when it went to Tennessee in 2022, can be tougher, a lot tougher. And even with that loss for LSU at Texas A&M, with some time to heal, you know, that LSU fan base, because it's Alabama, regardless of record, is going to be ready to go in a couple Saturdays.
Yeah, for sure. That game is going to be some tilt. Garrett Nussmeier, we'll go ahead and start jumping around the SEC. As a matter of fact, Garrett Nussmeier had a rough game against the Aggies. Started out okay, certainly.
Nightmares. Second half was just oof.
It was ugly for sure. Threw an ugly pick on a middle screen. I think that was maybe the last one he threw that was kind of you saw him put his hands on his head like, what have I done here? That was a guy whose confidence was shaken. Doesn't mean he won't play with confidence against Alabama, but 2 weeks before Alabama, that was a guy whose confidence had been shaken.
You know, the thing about Nussmeier is, to me, he's the consummate gunslinger. And gunslingers, if they have one thing, it's they have short-term memory. You know, they just keep coming at you like a Matthew Stafford and some of these other guys. So, yeah, I would say typically that would be something to keep an eye on. But I think Nussmeier is still going to be ripping it. And, you know, you talked about that throw in the middle. I thought the defensive player just made a hell of a play, because it looked like he was working a twist to actually rush the passer, knew he wasn't going to get there, kind of anticipated a check down in the middle of the field and just jumped right in front of it. So, it was, though, you're right. It was a great start for LSU in the game. I'll say this, though. LSU defensively, once Elko and A&M decided to go to Marcel Reed and the running option at that position,
yeah,
it looked too much for LSU fans like last year's defense, because really no option, no solution for Reed and Le'Veon Moss and the rest of that running game. Boy, the zone read and the keep, and even Reed going deep on one occasion down the middle of the field, that was a real problem for the LSU defense. And we know Jalen a year ago.
Yeah. You know,
we talk about his psyche. He should feel good about seeing LSU, because a year ago he ran for 155 and 4 touchdowns. And
yes.
And if there's anything going on with Jalen Milroe, you would think this bye week comes at a good time for him, whether it's health, whether it's anything else to help get him back in a good place, coming off a solid performance against Missouri, and have him where he needs to be. Because when I watch LSU defensively right now, I think it's going to have to be a similar type of approach to what we saw a year ago against the Tigers.
Yeah, some would defend, not me, and I'll say why in a minute, but some would defend LSU's defense a little bit and say, look, they practice all week for Connor Wiegman. How much zone read were they repping in practice with? But to me, that doesn't really fly, Travis, because it's almost Halloween, I don't care who's on your schedule. Your defense has seen enough zone read by this point in the year that you got to be able to adjust better than that, right?
You do. I will say, though, it is. That's where having a Marcel Reed in your back pocket, and I give Elko a lot of credit, too. He had a sample size of Wiegman, though, from that Notre Dame game. And that Connor that we saw last night against LSU looked like the one we saw against Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And so down 10 there in the third quarter, Elko decided he wasn't going that route again. He was going to switch it up. And he had been able to get Marcel Reed all that work after going to him, you know, early in the season. So there was the benefit of that as well. And boy, again, you know, it was something that LSU just couldn't really deal with.
Did you happen to catch the veiled jab at Jimbo coming from Elko?
That wasn't veiled. That was not veiled. When he said quick talking, I kind of knew who he was talking
to. Yeah, right. Yeah, no veil at all. That was something. But kind of out of nowhere, too.
Yeah.
Fast talking politician, he called him. Like,
What about Eli Drinkwitz dropping bombs on LT Overton that was caught in game on Saturday? How about Eli?
You know what? If an opposing player jumps in the other team's coach's face and the coach says something back, that you live with, I think. To me, if I'm an AD, I don't want to see my coach starting anything with kids on another team. You know, come on.
That's kind of Eli, though. You know, I kind of refer to him as Dollar General Steve Spurrier. You know, just because you wear a visor, Eli, doesn't make you Steven or Spurrier. But he likes to
T-shirt alert. Somebody out there listening to Talking Tide can crank that up for T-shirts. Royalties to Travis for sure.
Yeah, DG Steve Spurrier. That's Eli Drinkwitz. He keeps it fun. I will say that. I like Eli Drinkwitz at like SEC Media Days because he'll get up there, you know, and he'll try to do his cover act of maybe Spurrier a little bit up there at the podium. So keeps it light, keeps it fun. I love that. But that was something else Saturday.
Texas 27-24 over Vanderbilt. We touched on that just a little bit earlier in the pod. Travis, what did you make of Vandy hanging with Texas? I think they were 20-point favorites. Yeah. Vandy's a tough out, plainly.
Yeah, maybe, you know, we need to go back and reassess that Alabama loss to Vanderbilt. You know, it's Vandy, so Alabama fans are never going to be able to wrap their head around losing to Vandy because it doesn't matter if Vandy was 25th in the country going into that game against Texas and played Texas to a field goal. And really made that game competitive, stayed competitive throughout that game. Now, the one thing Texas did do that Alabama never did in Nashville, had control of that game, at least, you know, couple of score lead, you know, wasn't playing from behind. I think that probably bothers Alabama fans as much as anything is that Vandy jumped on Alabama and Alabama never really never got on top.
You never had a lead for a minute. Had a lead for a second.
Got wired to wired by Vandy. But hey, like I've said, Diego Pavia, you know, that's F around and find out territory. If you let that guy hang around into the fourth quarter, you may not like it real good, you know? And so he had the big pick, threw the bad pick there in the fourth quarter, but then he still gave him a shot with an onside kick late anyway.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt about it. When you got a guy like that running that option, it's fun for sure. Ole Miss 26-14 over the hapless Oklahoma Sooners, who are now back to Jackson Arnold at the quarterback position. Travis, they're into their second offensive coordinator after Seth Luttrell was let go by Brent Venables. And they go in there, and Jackson Arnold didn't play poorly, but at the end of the day, 14 points isn't going to cut it in Oxford.
No, and it seemed like once Pete Golding and the Ole Miss defense was able to adjust, especially to some quarterback runs that Oklahoma was giving Ole Miss with Jackson Arnold, that was pretty much it. And, you know, Ole Miss still a really good football team, man. More well-rounded than what we've seen. And, you know, look, they still have an opportunity. You know, they got Georgia coming up here in November. Interesting month for Georgia coming up too, because you get Tennessee, go to Oxford. Still so much to play out in this league. I know a lot of people have already written off Alabama in terms of Atlanta, and it definitely seems like it's remote. But you know, you've got Georgia with a loss in the league. You got Texas with a loss in the league, and you still got some big games coming up. Man, just look at how much different Texas A&M looks after last night. You know, you still got Aggies and Longhorns getting back together for the first time in a long time coming up on Thanksgiving weekend. Man, there are just a lot of huge games on the horizon.
What's it going to look like if Texas and Texas A&M play each other back-to-back weeks? See, regular season finale, and then head-to-head in the SEC championship game. The ratings outside of Texas for the second one would be totally in the dumper.
You think?
Outside of Texas. I'm not talking about the Dallas market, the Houston market.
I think what helps, though, is – It's championship Saturday. What else are you going to watch? It's not your typical college football Saturday. So if you want to watch a college football game, I guess at 4 Eastern or whatever it is,
right?
That's going to be clearly your varsity game. I don't know. Maybe CUSA will be up against it or something. But that you're right. That's still not what the league, I'm sure, would like, or most of us would like. But you know, I think it does help if it is just that championship Saturday.
Definitely. To clarify, what I meant was in the dumper relative to an SEC title game.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Like some of the ones like Alabama, Georgia that we've seen, especially when that's been the only time we've seen Alabama and Georgia.
Yeah.
Right. During a season, or Alabama and Florida, some of those matchups for sure. Yeah.
All right, Auburn 24, Kentucky 10. Travis, Kentucky, man, it's just hit the skids after, I guess, they had one big win, right? Who's their best win? They
went on the road and beat Ole Miss.
They beat Ole Miss. That's right.
Here they go. Mark Stoops going to win 8 or 9 games here again. And now it looks like, you know, I think Kentucky's been to bowl games 9 straight years under Mark Stoops. And now – you're starting to look at what's left on this schedule. You got Tennessee, mm-hmm. I think, what, this weekend? Kentucky
right.
on the road.
Yeah.
Tennessee coming off the bye week. And you're having a hard time getting the 7 wins. Although Louisville, in that final regular season game for Kentucky, Louisville looks like it's doing its own version of Kentucky maybe right now too. Seems to be spiraling a little bit.
No question about it. Hugh Freeze ill. I think he was late getting there.
I thought we were going to get Hugh up in a box in a hospital bed again.
That would have another, yeah.
Like
yeah.
we did at Liberty or something, but
giving you the thumbs up, you know, seeing the camera out there.
Don't be scared. Don't get nervous. I'm fine. That was something else.
Kentucky now.
Yeah.
Kentucky, I think, Travis, I don't think they've started a quarterback who they recruited from high school up in 3 or 4 years. I mean, they're just going transfer at that spot.
Yeah, that's Vandegrift. Will
three in a row at least.
Went to NC State for their guy last year.
Yeah,
no, they love them. They love the transfer quarterbacks, no doubt about it. So, you know, look, that's kind of what it is around college football right now. I tweeted this earlier. It's not SEC related, but when I look at Miami right now, I see FSU from a year ago. And so if something happens to Cam Ward, which is what happened with Florida State last year with Jordan Travis, you know, who knows what Miami really is. And then thinking about Miami next year after Cam Ward does his layover and moves on to the National Football League, who knows what some of these teams, they're so transfer portal dependent on the most important position on the field. It's hard to get a feel for the big picture, like 2 or 3 year picture anymore. Right.
Right.
With most of these teams, because it's even more fluid at the quarterback position than it was prior to the portal.
Yeah. I'm zipping through my head on starting quarterbacks around the SEC. Ewers was a transfer guy. Milroe was not. Iamaleva was not. Carson Beck was not. But you keep going down the list and you run into quite a few.
Graham Mertz was before his injury at Florida.
Right.
I guess Lenore Sellers at South Carolina is organic. I guess that's what I call.
Peyton Thorne's a transfer.
Peyton Thorne's a transfer. Robbie Ashford's at South Carolina. He plays some now.
Right.
Obviously, a transfer from Auburn. Arkansas with Taylen Green came in from Boise State.
Yep.
You can go a lot of places. Mississippi State started the season with Blake Shapen from Baylor. Sure. Go a number of ways with this thing.
Interesting, though, that of the few that we named where the starter actually signed with the school, pretty teams mostly at the top of the standings.
Yeah. I mean, if you hit it right, it can be a beautiful thing. And, you know, Miami, go back to De'Aaron King, you know, thought they had hit it right with him when he transferred in from Houston. Not so much, but this time with Cam Ward, it looks like they've hit it right here.
Yeah. All right. I think we've hit right to the end here on Talking Tide on this Sunday nighter, recapping Alabama's 34-0 win over Mizzou. Want to thank our viewers and listeners. Yeah. Make sure you get on Ryer on YouTube, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. Travis, what's in store over the next few days on Ryer on YouTube?
We're gonna have Second Helping coming up tomorrow night, probably in the same time slot. We'll have Brent Beard on, and we'll talk some Southeastern Conference football. A little more in depth, we'll go over this past weekend, start to look ahead to the upcoming weekend. Obviously, Alabama and LSU on their byes as they get ready for that big matchup in Baton Rouge in a couple of Saturdays, but you'll have the cocktail party coming up in Jacksonville with Florida and Georgia, and plenty of stuff here on the channel as we move through the week.
All right, for Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. Be sure to join us next time right here on Talking Tide.